From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Facing a forecast of heaps of snow the other day, Ken Drews and I got to dreaming on the phone together of more colorful times ahead, of the emergence not so very long in the future of spring's first woodland perennials, natives that do their thing early beneath trees and shrubs. So, hey, let's make it another edition of our Desert Island Plants series on the radio show and podcast, we decided. And so favorite natives of spring are the topic today, but first these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
Talking about our most loved spring native woodland perennials is a perfect fit for Ken Drews, whose books The Natural Shade Garden in 1992 and The New Shade Garden, published in 2015, each covered a choice selection of such plants. So he's back today on Skype from his own snowbank a few hours' drive away from mine to think spring and its fantastic native perennials. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Margaret.
How's the snowbank?
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
There was a white hippopotamus in the driveway, and it turned out to be my car.
Yeah, that'll happen. So we, in our previous Desert Island Plants editions, last couple of months, we've done trees and shrubs. And we just, I guess because we were so desperate, as I said, sort of winter desperate, starved for color, we got to talking about this the other day. And, you know, I realized when I sort of started making my list in preparation, these are some of the plants that I've had here the longest. Do you know what I mean? The native perennials, they were some of the first things I either bought or that I found when I got here.
You know, I call these plants woodlanders because the ones that I think about most are the plants of the woodland and the early spring plants. And some of them we call ephemerals because they bloom and they either fade away or just bloom and set seed, sometimes even before the leaves on the trees come out. But, you know, when we started talking about this, we were going to do our favorite shade plants. Then we were going to do our favorite woodland plants. And then we thought, well, early woodland plants. And then we thought native woodland plants. And then I looked up my county's native woodland plants because you know how we start with 2,000 plants.
Yes.
And have to get it down to
slice
maybe
and dice.
20.
Yeah, slice and dice. Yeah. Yeah. But sort of the early spring natives, you know, as you point out, they're sort of the opportunists that take advantage of the light that's coming through the canopy of the shrubs or trees in nature before leaves get on the trees above, and they do their thing. They photosynthesize, you know, they jump up, they photosynthesize, they flower, they set seed, they try to do it early because otherwise there's not enough light resources often.
Well, some of these plants that are my favorites have not been in my garden the longest because they don't like sandy soil. That's one thing. They don't like alkaline soil. My soil's kind of neutral. They want slightly acidic to acidic, most of them. And they're flood intolerant.
Oh, all the things that you're not.
Right.
Right.
So
you have floods.
Underwater. You know, one year when we had Hurricane Irene, I have a lot of Trillium grandiflorum. And the next year, none. And I thought it was heartbreaking. But then the year after, they came up. They just took a year off.
Oh, well, so let's start there. Because Trillium is, of course, one of the things we think of when we think of what jumps up early and does its thing and is spectacular native little woodlanders. They, grandiflorum, you know, I thought, and we're both in the Northeast, we should say to those who haven't listened before. I always thought that must be native here, too. And it's not. In where I am, which is up the Hudson Valley a bit, adjacent to the Berkshires of Massachusetts, it's not. Trillium erectum is, and I think something else, but not grandiflorum, which is elsewhere in the Northeast, but not right here.
Massachusetts, yes.
And you kind of alluded to this before. You said about, you know, native to your county and whatever. And we should confess that we're both sort of, we've become insane, like range map geeks, you know, really finding out not just is it native to the U.S., but is it native to like right here? Like we've both become kind of crazy about that. And not to say that our whole gardens are dictated by that, but it's a fascination that we have.
And it's, I call it local.
Yeah.
Because there's native, there's indigenous, you know, indigenous to North America, native to North America, and then local to me. Some people say local is a 50-mile radius, but that's too general.
Right.
So for me, I often think of 10-mile radius, and now there's so many things online where you can put in your county and native plants, and usually there's lists.
Right. The flora of such and such. For me, right. It's the flora of Columbia County, New York. And we've talked about that before. So trillium. So I found three clumps of trillium erectum, the reddish colored, you know, wake robin.
Nodding trillium.
Yeah. Under my porch, the edge of my porch. When I first moved here, I found them. I dug them up and I moved them into a better place. And I have lots now. What trilliums are you growing?
Well, I have, as you know, many trillium. And of course, I grow grandiflorum, as I said. I love trillium luteum because it's a little bit later and it blooms for such a long time. I have cuneatum, Cecily, a lot. But erectum, oddly enough, even though I'm well over 100 miles from you, is also native to my county.
Right. So, and that was the kind of fun thing, like looking up, it's maybe the eastern third of the country it's native in. So again, people who aren't listening in New Jersey or New York State where we are, it's much more widely, it's much more widely, about the eastern third of the country, as I said, much more widely native than just where we're talking about. So
I know we've talked about trillium a lot in the past, but we should maybe describe that it has three leaves and three petals. They're bracts on the flowers. And our trillium rectum is kind of almost dried blood red.
Blood.
And the flowers hang down a little bit, which is why it's nodding.
So, and we've talked about before, and I'll give a link to all the details on this, but if you want to multiply it, it'll start to self-sow once established in your garden, as long as you don't put too much mulch on or clean up too strongly around the clumps. But also, you and I both have for many years moved them and divided the little, sort of knobby little rhizomes beneath the ground. We dig them up when they're in flower and we move them around and make new clusters and so forth.
And people don't believe us.
Right, but it's true and we'll show the details. So what's the next one you want to shout out among native woodlanders?
Well, you know, I mentioned ephemerals. Uh-huh. And I like some of those because when something blooms really early and then disappears, it makes room for something else. So I have a lot of Mertensia virginica, Virginia bluebells, and they bloom in lots of places and also self-sow, not horribly, but, you know, gently. And I also have some white ones that appeared that are just incredibly beautiful. But the blue ones bloom and then they disappear. And for me, the hostas come up.
Right.
And the Virginia bluebells are completely gone. They melt. You don't see foliage, nothing.
But they'll come back next year, of course. And speaking of things that self-sow, they will self-sow around, I think. They do in my garden anyway. One really kooky, speaking of range map, things about that. The eastern bluebells are native to the eastern half of North America, except New England.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
Except me.
But they're not in New England technically. And I mean, they've been moved into New England, you know, but they're not native. And the woodland phlox divaricata, that also is eastern, but not, but not in New England, except where it's been moved into New England. So, you know, it's kind of, when you look at the range maps, that's what's kind of fun is to imagine the histories of these plants over the millennia and where they've been and so forth. And when we say native to, again, it doesn't mean it's widespread in any of those areas. It just means it's been noted as present in a particular state or county or whatever.
And we're not saying you can't grow native plants.
Correct.
If you want to.
Correct.
I mean, so, cool to do this. You know, when I started my woodland garden, I had two beds. One was plants that were local to a 10-mile radius, and the other bed was analogous species from around the world. But then I got sloppy. But that was the idea when I started.
Right. So any another ephemeral you want to shout out quickly?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
Oh, or not. Maybe not. Maybe not another ephemeral. That's totally
No, I was thinking what melts away. Well, okay. Bloodroot.
Mm-hmm.
Except the leaves sort of stick around. Mayapple disappears after it blooms and has fruit. I love bloodroot, which is sanguinaria, but when it blooms, and it tends to bloom for about an hour and a half on a Tuesday in May.
If it's not windy or raining.
Right.
It shatters the
But they're beautiful flowers. White flowers.
Yeah. No, I know.
But if we accept versions or, you know, cultivated varieties yes. of some of these native and local plants, the double bloodroot, just it hangs around. If it's cool, it'll hang around for 2 weeks. And it's yeah. one of the most beautiful plants in my entire garden.
So
and
there's that's, yeah.
I was going to say Sanguinaria canadensis multiplex.
Yeah. The double is multiplex, yeah. And right. so that one, again, eastern half of the United States, and that one goes farther south than some of our other eastern natives that maybe don't make it all the way down into, say, Texas or the deeper south. That one has a range, a native range, even into the warm states in the south of the eastern half or so of the country. So.
Is that local for you?
I don't really know. I don't think I looked
it's local for me.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. I want to name one that is not an ephemeral. Well, I mean, a couple of other quick ephemerals are like some of those little dicentras. The
oh right, of course.
You know,
Dutchman's breeches.
And
here today,
yeah.
gone tomorrow. That's what they should call.
Right. So there's kind of, and I have, you know, that one. And what's the other one? Dicentra.
Squirrel corn.
Yeah. I have those. Both of those. But they kind of come and go really quickly, and they're adorable. And the animals love to eat them. Woodchucks and rabbits love to eat them. So it's a little bit tricky for me to. That's how I know if Woody's here. In the early spring, is that they all come up and they're gorgeous, that ferny foliage, and then they're gone, and before they even flower, they're gone, and it's been like Woody the woodchuck is in residence. So, but one that I want to mention that's not ephemeral, but it's just been with me a really long time. I think from the native plant garden sale at the New York Botanical Garden, like decades and decades ago, is blue cohosh, Colophyllum phallactroides.
Mm.
And that might be one of my favorite plants of all time, and yet I never see it anywhere. It's native to the eastern half or so of the country, not super hot like Florida or Texas, but, you know, all the way out to the Dakotas practically, but not, you know, not in the super hot spots. And it just comes up out of the ground in this ungodly color of blue, of purpley kind of foliage.
Almost
right?
black.
Yeah, and just is so lovely and unusual. So you're getting beauty and color long before anything, you know, has little yellowish flowers and so forth, but long before anything. And it's just a really aristocratic plant, I think, for a little woodlander. Highly recommend people take a look at it. We'll put pictures with the transcript. By the way, we'll give away a copy of your new Shade Garden book with the transcript.
Great.
But it's so different. And that is that pigment thing, the anthocyanins that we associate with, as opposed to chlorophyll that's green. Yeah, we think of it as, you know, the fall pigments, but it, you know, in the spring, and nobody really knows the whole story. The scientists have a lot of conjecture and experiments around it. Do the anthocyanin pigments, those sort of bluish or red and purple pigments, do they make it taste bad so herbivorous insects and animals don't eat it? Yes, probably.
Yes.
Do they provide, you know, attractiveness so that something that's going to flower super early, even when it's just in foliage, looks more like a flower and gets interest from potential pollinators? Mm. Yes. But, you know, nobody knows exactly. There's a lot of different reasons that plants have these colors. But I love Colophyllum Phalacroides.
You know, the foliage reminds me of what we used to call semicifuga.
Yes.
And now we call Actea.
Yes.
And I think you have a, I think all these plants are poisonous, actually.
Yeah, yeah, but, whatever.
Whatever. I know you have a favorite Actea.
I love the Actea, the bane berries, the doll's eyes. You know, the semicifugas are later for me, so I wasn't including them in my spring.
Right, right.
Right. But the littler ones, the bane berries, the white and the red fruited ones. Pachypoda is, Actea pachypoda is the white bane berry, doll's eyes, and Actea rubra is the red bane berry, more common. Yeah, and I love them both, and they were here when I got here. They were at the woodland fringe, you know, a plant here and there, and I became interested in them and bought more. And as I'm doing my ground cover removal projects that we've talked about on recent episodes, when the snow melts, I am, that's one of the plants that I found myself ordering lots of little babies of to have more of. Yeah. Speaking of poisonous. Yes.
Well, just don't eat the berries, but they're called doll's eyes. Wait till you see the picture. You're going to post that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a good one.
So you must have at least slightly acidic soil because that is a plant that I think wants acid.
Yeah, I think so. And I was interested, again, Range Map Geek, to look and find out that the red one is very, very widespread. And it's what's even called circumboreal, however you say it. It is native in what is the largest floristic region of the world, you know, in terms of square miles or whatever, you know, most of Canada, Alaska, Europe, the Caucasus, I mean, Russia, you know, it's really, so it's this really widespread plant, whereas the white one is like just the eastern half of the U.S. or a little bit more. So first cousins, different ranges by far. Yeah.
Except for the berries, the plants look the same.
That's what I thought. I was like, what? Anyway, so kind of cool. Yeah.
Well, I love a plant that I think you've had trouble with.
Oh, dear.
And grows in my not-so-acidic soil, and it's sandy. Azarum canadense, the wild ginger, deciduous wild ginger.
Oh, it does well here. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I thought it did too well for you.
Well, it does. I mean, I have to be careful what I use it for. It's great as a ground cover for me. It's not something that... So under a bunch of shrubs or whatever, it'll make a great spreading ground cover. It will not stay in a clump, in a tidy clump, by any means.
Oh, no, it's a ground cover, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, great plant. And kooky little flowers. if you crawl around on the ground and like sort of brownish things.
Around.
Yeah. So what about, have you grown Jeffersonia? Jeffersonia diphylla, the twin leaf?
You know... Well, that's funny because in the analogous species department, there's an Asian twin leaf, which is very beautiful, and there's a North American twin leaf, and Jeffersonia. Who's that named for? I think we can guess.
Yeah.
I don't always think it's so showy.
No, but it's just something.
Because it's twin so leaf,
the way the delicateness of it. It's another one that comes out of the ground like the the blue cohosh, Colophyllum thalactroides, comes out of the ground in a strange purplish colored, you know, full of anthocyanin pigments. And it's also, it's related, like you mentioned the podophyllum. Did you mention podophyllum or no, you mentioned?
I said mayapple in passing, but we can talk
about this. Yeah, but so it's related. It's in the Barberry family. And that Western United States native, Vancouveria, that's in that. And our non-native but popular Epimediums are in that family. I'm always fascinated how many things are in the Barberry family that we like as garden perennials. So anyway, so who's next?
Well, we mentioned mayapple, and I have lots of mayapple growing in clumps, big clumps, naturally. And the Asian... Even Himalayan versions of mayapple are, the foliage is spectacular. And some of them have pink flowers, but our native mayapple has white flowers followed by quote unquote edible fruits They say edible, but they don't say good.
Oh.
I've tasted it. So, yeah, it's, I guess it won't hurt you.
Okay.
It's not that interesting. But Mayapple has a palmate leaf about as big as a big hand. Mm-hmm. And it grows in kind of a clump that's almost like a little pool, you know, and all the leaves are the same height. And if there's a breeze, they'll all move together. It's a really nice plant. I have heard that you shouldn't grow our local one with the Asian ones because they can transmit something. So just keep them apart.
Huh. Interesting. A different looking completely plant from that is what I call Mary Bell's Uvularia grandiflora. Yellow flowers that kind of dangle down, Mary Bell's, hence the common name. And just kind of, I don't know, the foliage is like twisted. Like, I don't know what.
You have hit one of my favorite plants.
Yeah. And I just love this plant. This is one that I haven't ever had it sow around. You've got to kind of, the clump just stays Oh, see, I've never had it sow. I've had to dig and take off a chunk and move it around.
Which is easy.
Yeah. But Uvularia grandiflora, I think underutilized. There isn't a year in the probably 25 plus years, I've probably had it even longer than that, that I've seen it, watched it come up and emerge and get ready to flower, that I haven't been delighted by every moment of its, you know, show. So that's a winner, I think, in the woodland.
And there's a native plant that I can't believe that it's a different species, but it's Uvularia perfoliata is local to me, and it looks exactly the same. I mean, really, except the flowers are cream colored.
Oh.
And it's not anywhere near as happy. I have to baby it a little bit. But, you know, when it says perfoliate or perfoliata, it tells you something about how you said every moment of this plant. After it blooms, usually we don't care. With this plant, it looks like the leaves are sewn with zigzag thread.
Yes.
The stems pierce the leaves.
Yes.
And then we'll take go at an angle, pierce another one, go at another angle. It's one of my absolute favorite plants. The grandiflora is native but not local to me. Isn't that weird? And perfoliata is local to me, which is called bellwort, too.
Yeah.
Or perfoliate bellwort.
So in the last couple, 2-3 minutes or something, I mean, three minutes?
How'd that happen?
Oh, whatever. Myanthemum. I when I first got here up at the top of the hill by the edge of the woods, there's a giant sweep of this ground cover that has these tiny little flowers, white flowers in the spring, Myanthemum canadense. And I believe that you have, I've never cultivated, I've never like put it in a garden bed, but it's just this wonderful sort of native ground cover thing. But I think you have some taller Myanthemums, do you?
Oh, I do, but the one you're talking about, which is sometimes called false lily of the valley, but better known as Mayflower.
Yes.
And I've seen in Massachusetts people mow it in their lawn. I don't mow it. I have some. But I don't mow mine. But some of the Myanthemums used to be known as polygonatums, but they weren't. Mm-hmm. There's Myanthemum racemosa. That's false Solomon's seal.
Right.
And it has lovely leaves. The foliage is beautiful. And then it has starry white flowers. And then it has really cool berries that change colors, you know, from green to sort of, I don't know, they look like wood color. It's like oak, cut oak, and then they turn red. And it will come up from seed, but it's certainly not aggressively enough, if you ask me. And then there's star flower, which is also sometimes called star bead, because after it flowers, it's a similar looking plant. The berries look as if they have a black star on a green berry.
Oh, right. I've seen a picture of it. Huh. Yeah. Okay, so last minute shout out, native geranium, Geranium maculatum, was here when I got here also, and I'm glad for that.
A very underused plant.
Very underused. If you need something in shady areas that gives you a little bit of color, I think pinkish flowers in the spring, but lovely foliage, geranium-ish foliage. Couldn't be easier. loves the shade, will knit well with other things, is never thuggish. That's a great one, I think.
It might be our only native geranium. I'm not sure about that, but...
Well, we have Robertianum, and they don't know if that's native or not. They think maybe it's not, but it's so widespread. It's been here for a zillion years and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, so lots and lots and lots. We didn't even mention Jack in the Pulpit. There were some here when I got here.
A lot, though.
yeah. But were there some at your place when you got there?
Yes.
Yeah, here too. And we didn't talk about the Cypripediums, I don't think, did we?
No, we don't have any time, do we?
No. 20 seconds. Tell me.
I can't grow it because some of them want acid. But a friend of mine who has an acid situation has a clump that I wouldn't believe of the yellow one. And I don't know if I can grow that. Cypripedium reginae, the showy lady slipper orchid, which I've seen in Minnesota, it likes alkaline. So I might try that if I've got $50 to spend on an orchid.
Yes. I have never grown any, but they are native here as well.
Spectacularly beautiful. That's really breathtaking.
All right. Well, when it starts to snow again, I'll call you, okay? And we can figure out what else we want to talk about and dream of spring together. And we'll have a book giveaway, as I said, with the new shade garden. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Margaret.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or on Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. or on Facebook and on Instagram as @AwayToGarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.